Session number 9431, Reel 3.
Mr. Grunwell, Reel 4. We were discussing keeping clean, and in particular lice. Can you tell me something about that problem?
Well, the only thing about it, if you happened to be where there was a river, you then indulge in having a go in the river to cleanse yourself and feel reasonably clean. As regards your clothing, you've got to change your clothing every so long, but no sooner had you got out of one lot of clothing, shirts, and you got the other on, you was practically as bad. Because it was said that there was eggs left that washed the shirts, probably, I don't know how, probably that was done probably by the army. You got them on and of course there you was, but you just got to carry on. There was times, but this was later on, but it was when you was away from the line, you might come across some place where there was a kind of a shed and you might be able to get just a shower bath. I remember on one occasion that I had a bath, I had one of these shower baths, got all lathered up, when whether the water or not, or whether the time was up or not, but was left in that state of lathered up, and there he was. On another occasion, whether this was in France, had a bath, or the company had a bath. There was a long, I think it must have been some kind of canvas, about that depth, filled with water, and as far as I remember, whether the old company bathed in that water, I don't know, but you can understand how you would feel. But then again, you got to, and of course, well, I was, as I say, when I was out there, I was only young, and of course, you got to make the best of things and carry on. Yes, you got to just go on from day to day and week to week.
Is that how you felt at the time?
Pardon?
Is that how you felt at the time about not being able to keep clean and being lousy?
Oh, definitely. Oh.
Can you think of any other ways that you actually try to get rid of lice, apart from bathing? When you're in the front line, was there any ways you could get rid of lice there?
No. No.
Were there any other pests that that were a nuisance there, like rats, for example?
No, I don't remember.
And at this time, there would be, were there any dead bodies lying out in No Man's Land or near the trench system that you were occupied?
Well, while we were there, many of the months was fairly quiet time. You went in the trenches, did so many weeks in the trenches, came out, so many weeks out, things went on. The time of the year was when it was long days, fairly nice days, and of course, everything was all right. It was when the offensive came.
Yes.
Never trouble, we were just locked up. The Germans was there and we was there. And of course, you might hear a rifle fire just now and again, but or you might hear a trench mortar or something of that, but practically nothing doing, really.
As regards your own health, did you manage to remain healthy in the trenches?
Yes.
Can we now turn to the sort of daily routine of trench life here? And perhaps you can tell me something about the various times of day that you were involved in various activities. What time would it be that you'd stand to in the morning?
Yeah, really. No.
Can you tell me what sort of things you would do during the daytime, normally speaking? What sort of activities you might be on?
I suppose if we should chat together between us, and I don't remember anything else, really.
Did you have any special duties to do during the daytime?
Well, occasionally we was on the on duty. You were on duty. It was on the up
on the fire step.
On the step, yeah. But otherwise, there was nothing to do, really. He was there in a trench. We couldn't do anything about it. As I say, the only relief was the Germans coming over in the planes, or our chaps coming over afterwards, and seeing the observation balloons as well up, looking and visualising what was going on, and then, of course, the dogfights in the...
Did you see many dogfights?
Oh, quite a lot, and to see them coming down as well. And these Bissell scouts, talk about daredevils, they used to any turn around and, oh, they were clever. I don't know whether they later on there was any cleverer than them, but in their particular, it was a small plane. But whether it's seaplanes as well, I don't know. But there was all those acrobats in the air. And of course, I suppose it must have been rather a pleasure for us to see one of these Germans with an Iron Cross just simply coming round, and that's one down, one of ours, or one of theirs down.
Were there many German aircraft that flew over your trenches?
Well, no, they occasionally came over. It was the same as the boats on the Suez Canal. They wasn't there all the time. They'd just come and perhaps go away, and another couple of hours they might turn up again.
Was there any attempt by them to strafe the trenches?
No, there was observation planes, that's all it was. Occasionally... I don't remember, but occasionally whether some of our chaps would have a go, have a pot at them, try to hit them, I don't know, because they came fairly close, you know.
Did you ever have a go at shooting at them?
No. No. I'm afraid if there'd have been anything of that, next time they might have been over with a few, like, bombs and tit for tat.
So it was best not to anger them.
That's right.
What about nighttime activities? You've mentioned, I think, sentry duty. What was the sentry rota that you did in the front line?
Well, I think it must have been 2 hours on and four off, really. But he was just there, as you might say, on the alert. You couldn't do anything much at night time. During the day, you got the called periscopes, which you put at the back of the trench, say that with the front line. It's kind of a looking glass. You could see then what was going on. But as I say, it was just a quiet time.
Were there any working parties that you went on?
The only working parties was, as I say, when you was out of the line and what we did, I don't know what we did in the day. Of course, as I told you, some of the working parties, I told you one at Burton Court, I remember we used to make slabs, concrete slabs. But the working party was generally at night time. So that carrying about ammunition, the Germans wouldn't see you doing that. They knew of it for all that. But there was a danger of, I suppose, if they'd seen you going up on the road, that the black wet were there, artillery, the light artillery. So it was night time. I remember on one occasion we had to take some trench mortars. Now these mortars had a stem about that size, about that thickness, and a ball on the top. And they was put in the battery. The shaft was put in. Well, on this occasion, if you could manage two, it would save your journey of a walk about 3 or 4 miles. A few people hadn't believed me, but I know I took two of those up. There was, I don't know whether it was 40 or 50 pounds, just to save having to go up again. But also you take ammunition, cartridges. But it was done at night time chiefly.
How many hours would you have to work at night time?
Well, it's times. Well, you can just visualise if you was walking from headquarters and walking 4 or 5 miles, and if you was weighed down with things, well, it'd take you, well, 4 miles. If you'd be going about 6 hours, as far as I can see. If you were doing if you was carrying stuff and doing 2 mile an hour, that's not bad going.
Can you remember any other working parties that you were involved with? Did you ever go on a wiring party?
No. No, that was as far as was left with the Royal Engineers.
And what about ration parties? Did you ever bring up rations?
Can't remember that. We must have done, but I can't remember.
Excuse me. Were you ever involved in patrols out into no man's land or raids?
No, not on that occasion anyway. Not at that time of the war.
Right, and finally, to look at this particular aspect of daily routine, you mentioned it was a quiet sector and there was very little activity. Were there any men who had had enough of the war, even at this stage, and wanted to get out of it?
I don't remember them, but I do remember, I don't know just now exactly when it was, but there's a man from Queensbury. Oh, it must have been, no, it was later on when I was in Belgium. Man from Queensbury, he was he must have been 40 or 45. Absolutely fed up, not in the good of health. And he said, I wish I could get just a blighty. And whether he tried to walk on the top of the trenches at night time with the idea of perhaps a bullet hitting his ankle so he'd get out, well, I don't know. I've no idea. I got out, as I've told you, at the far end with being hit with a sniper. But in those days, it was early on, things were quiet, the weather was fine, and everything was all right.
Yes, would you say the morale of your regiment was high at that point?
Oh, definitely, yes. And of course, one thing about it, why it didn't answer otherwise, pals, you see, all together, so to speak. Of course, when the offensive came, it meant that a lot of those pals lost. Whereas if they'd have been spread out into other regiments, wouldn't have been severe the loss.
Yes, that's true. Did you think of that at the time?
No. No.
Do you think that by being a POWs battalion, by knowing a lot of the people for a long, long time, perhaps, way before you you joined up, do you think that affected morale?
No. No. Now, from where I lived in Bolton Lane, Bolton Bradford, there was five of us joined from that. Just down an old lane. I must have joined there. And we was in the same company. I wasn't in the same section, but something to know that you was known. Of course, there was other people you didn't know, but you was pals together.
Right, perhaps we can now turn to the preparations for the battle that you were involved in. Can you tell me something about the build-up to the Battle of the Somme?
Well, as regards build-up, as I've already said, the build-up in the first sense of the word was having the goods to do the job. In other words, the working parties taking up the ammunition, taking up the trench mortars, and so on, you see.
How long did that build-up go on for?
Well, it must have gone up for, perhaps a month. It might have been more, really. Might have been longer, really.
Do you remember regularly bringing up things like...
one of the funny things about it was this. You see, these working parties, I have already said. I don't know whether they started at 7 o'clock or something like that. Well, it wasn't... At 7 o'clock at this place in Buzz, nobody wanted to really go up and make themselves scarce and have a real job in getting the men. I suppose they didn't want the trouble of mucking stuff up there, really, but it was funny, really.
That was when you were in reserve, was it?
That's right. That's when you did the working parties, when you were in reserve.
And how would you make yourself scarce? How could you actually contrive to do that?
Well, when there was a fall in, when there was a call for, called by the sergeant or the sergeant major to fall in for the working party. Wasn't anybody there? Anyway, things went on and evidently we got things up there. And of course, Friday night came. That would be the July 1st Eve, and on the move. The Germans must have sensed it. We entered the trenches up at just, I think, beyond Corcelles somewhere. Suddenly the Germans started with it. His guns. Quite a few casualties before the day came. Must have realised that we was getting into position.
Can you remember anything about the British bombardment of the German lines?
Yes, as far as I remember, the offensive started, as far as we was concerned, the infantry, 7:30 Saturday morning, July 1st. Well, I think there was a barrage put on the German lines for a start.
Did you actually see that taking place, the barrage in the German lines?
Well, we heard it, but we didn't see it. We was down below.
To return to the scene you described a moment ago, you were in the trenches and the Germans bombarded you. Was that the first time that you'd actually suffered a bombardment?
Yes.
Can you describe your feelings at that time?
Well, I thought it was hell. I thought it was hell. It was chaotic and it was just simply...
What did you do to try and protect yourself?
Well, in my case, I was wounded so long, so soon in it. You couldn't, as regards protection, you know protection at all.
Were you actually wounded by the bombardment?
Yes, piece of shrapnel.
And where did the shrapnel hit you?
Went in my wrist. came out the side of my hand.
After the bombardment was over, could you describe the scene in the trench?
Well, the sides of the trench was all so battered in that the trench was of little or no use as intended.
Were the many men that wounded?
There was a lot of people wounded, definitely, yes. But I was only there a short time, so I wasn't moving about among the wounded.
Could you say what the reaction of that group of men was to the bombardment?
Well, I feel this, that we felt it being sacrificed to ease the French farther down the line. Purely and simply. Because we made practically, as far as I know, no advance.
Did you feel that at the time?
No. Our objective was all as I know was Gatherell. And of course there was a place called Sur, I think that's S-E-R-R-E. I think that was part of the sector that we was in. But I'm afraid we made no advance.
Were the troops given any instructions about when they were going over about, for example, keeping up with the bombardment that went ahead of them?
No. No.
You mentioned earlier on that something was put on the back of the haversacks of the soldiers.
That's right. It was a triangular piece of tin, so that our artillery would know just where we were, so that instead of shelling us, they'd know that we wasn't the Germans.
Do you think that helped in any way?
Well, I'm sure it must have done. It must have been the order of the division or the army authority. Yes.
Now, to return to what happened to you, you didn't actually go over the top with the men when they left the trenches. Is that right?
I don't remember that. Whether I got up over, I must have done without. It was fairly early on, whether it was half an hour after, but as I say, I can't just remember whether I was up or not. I suppose I should be. That was the order.
So that the bombardment actually started after the attack had been ordered, after the attack had actually been the British attack had started.
As soon as we got out of those trenches, there it came.
Can you remember any of the scene as you got out of the trenches, what it looked like?
I'd say it was, well, just furrows in the earth, that was it. Instead of trenches, just simply furrows in the ground, or what you'd call it, I don't know, just the right word. The trenches was taboo. Finished. as regards trenches.
When you were wounded, what happened to you?
Well, I made my way, and all the time I was feeling the next one will be a bullet in my head.
Because you were still above the trenches at this time.
Well, I was walking out, you see. Yeah. Yes.
Were there many other wounded walking back at that point?
Well, I don't remember, really. I don't remember. I suppose it was every man for himself, and of course, I suppose as I got further back, there would be RAMC people, what was on the job, to more or less handle us and take us to the nearest clearing station, so to speak.
Can you remember what happened to you? What did the RAMC do to you?
Well, I should think myself, really, with the hand like it was, it must have been like that, and I suppose I perhaps shove a bandage down and get me to the hospital as soon as possible.
Can you remember what happened at the casualty clearing station?
I don't know whether it was a place called Doulon's where I was taken. I'm not certain. I suppose they'd dress the wound and next news down to, as I say, Le Havre or Rouen. I don't know which it was now. Whether it was Rouen or Le Havre, I'm not certain, but it was one of the main hospital there for.
And you went to hospital there, did you?
Yes, that's right.
Can you remember what treatment was given to you?
Well, just simply, I suppose they doctored the wound, got poison out, bound it up, and then decided whether I needed further treatment, and sending me back to England. Eventually they decided that I needed to go back, and eventually I found myself at Southampton, and from there to Bristol, and from Bristol to convalescence, not far from Yeovil.
Not far from Yeovil. What was your feeling about returning to Britain?
Well, it was a great thing, definitely.
Can you tell me what happened to you at Yeovil?
Well, it was actually, while I speak of Yeovil, it was Norton sub Hampden, perhaps 4 miles from Yeovil. There we was looked after like lords. We was well fed, well housed, with recreation. We was taken out on occasionally, perhaps, by people. We went to Weymouth on, I think it was, whether it was a good glove factory at a place called Stoke-under-Am, what arranged to take us there for the day, and it was quite enjoyable. And when we was at the home or the hospital, we enjoyed the gardens, which we indulged in different, well, croquet was one of the usual things, but I think there was bowls as well, but we'd quite a nice time. Yes.
How long were you at the hospital?
About 6 weeks.
And what happened then?
The doctor from the hospital at Bristol, Southmead General Hospital, came down